You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Sunday right here on KTEP. And joining us today on Perspectives is Annie Fitzsimmons. Annie is the Urban Insider expert for National Geographic, and the book that just came out, World's Best Cities, Celebrating 220 Great Destinations. Thank you, Annie, for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Annie, tell us, what does Urban Insider mean? Is that a specific title?
I always joke that whenever you add insider to the end of it, it puts a lot of pressure on you.
Yes.
That you have to actually be an insider.
Yes.
But basically, it's a job that I worked with National Geographic to create, something that didn't exist before, where we really concentrate on urban culture, hotels, restaurants, all of those things that we really love about cities. And I think that we're at a point where you can create whatever job you want. It's not always easy, but I think you can do it. And I've always been obsessed with cities, travel, and media. So this is really a great way to, you know, work in all of those different areas. And so we started Urban Insider in 2012, and I get to travel to cities all over the world and tap into the pulse of what's going on. So I'm usually on the road about 2.5 to 3 weeks every month.
That's incredible. We are visiting with Annie Fitzsimmons. She is the editor, writer of The World's Best Cities. National Geographic has just put out a great, beautiful book. You know, National Geographic is known for their photography, and there's some great pictures in this book about the various destinations, 220 destinations. But I failed to tell you a little bit about Annie before we started. So Annie is the spokesperson for National Geographic's Travel Urban Insider, as you just heard. She has followed the cosmopolitan culture connection from great places to stay and one-of-a-kind things to do in her home base, New York City, to tips from locals to in the know in cities around the world. Fitzsimmons is trusted to get urban travelers up to speed, and you can follow her blog at nationalgeographic.com/blog/urban-insider, and on Twitter at Annie Fitz, and on Instagram at Annie Fitzsimmons. You have a lot of things to get connected with there, Annie.
Thank you for those plugs.
Oh, you're welcome. So you mentioned about your traveling and how you're gone that much every month. How do you plan one of these trips?
I'm kind of obsessive, type A personality when it comes to researching travel. So for the past, I would say maybe 15 years, I've had these documents on my computer that I've divided up by country and by city. And I always just pull in, if someone tells me, oh my gosh, in Paris, I just went to this amazing neighborhood restaurant, you have to go, I'll write it down and I'll put it into my Paris document. Or if they tell me, you know, there's this new museum that just opened in Mexico City, you have to go, I'll add that to my Mexico City document. And so before I go someplace, I'm 80% ready to go already because I continually plan before I go, which is, I know, probably not what most people would do, but I really think that it really helps me before I go to a new city that I already have this understanding of the place before I go.
Now, that's got to be a little bit difficult for you because you're not like anybody else who may just be going to one or two destinations. I'm sure that you hit various destinations at a time, and not only do you just go visit that city, but you go visit there with a specific purpose to find out exactly what people told you and perhaps to find out things on your own.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that, you know, for example, I leave Saturday, I go to London, Paris, Berlin, Lisbon, I'm doing a Portugal wine cruise, and then finally ending with a conference in Cannes in France. And so planning that definitely is difficult, not to mention, you know, what do I pack to wear for a variety of weather? You know, it is, and I have these documents and all of these things that I have saved, but I also always allow for serendipity to lead the way whenever I get to a city, and whether that's meeting someone in London that tells me there's this new place, you know, in South Kensington that you have to go try, or you have to go visit Stratford in East London, and, you know, so I always follow those things as well and always sort of allow for that element of surprise, which is usually where you get the best stories and the best information.
When you open the book, you have a list of the cities. Are the cities in any particular order, Annie?
At the beginning, we sort of ordered them by population. So that's how we've set it up. And then we have different sections of the book. So we have different lists, like the happiest cities or food cities, haunted cities, speaking of Halloween coming up. And so we sort of have those sections as well, sort of peppered in between the order of the population. And I really, you know, I just think it's such a beautiful book. For the first time in May in Ireland, I traveled with a National Geographic photographer, and I was blown away at how meticulous and how much attention to detail she put into her work, you know, waking up at 5 and going to bed at 2 just to get the best shot. And I think all of these National Geographic photographers, the photos that are in this book, sort of is reflected. You really feel like you're there just by looking at these pictures.
As far as NPR, you think of sound, and National Geographic, when you look at a picture, in many instances, that's all you need, just the picture, because that tells an entire story.
It really does. It really does. And I think that, you know, I think everyone has a story when it relates to National Geographic. Wherever I go around the world, I talk about how I was in China, in the Yunnan province of China, which is considered to be the Wild West of China. And, you know, they were living in huts and didn't have running water, and their toilets were basically holes in the ground, and there were these amazing, wonderful people. And, you know, we had nothing in common except for, you know, talking and smiling. But they all knew National Geographic. And so I think that, you know, they knew the photos and they knew the name and what it represented. So it is definitely very cool.
You mentioned the haunted cities in the world, and I think our listeners would want to hear about that.
Sure, yeah. Well, we list haunted cities that you might not necessarily think of. So those of us in America, we know Salem, Massachusetts, you know, the witch trials, so we include that. But we also include cities like Zanzibar City, Tanzania, where there's apparently a legendary shapeshifter named Popo Bawa, a one-eyed creature that is said to resemble a bat that sort of wanders around haunting people. We include Madrid, Spain, where for me, Madrid is all about the churros dipped in chocolate and the Prado Museum and Retiro Park, and, you know, it's such a beautiful city. But apparently at the Reina Sofia Museum, there's a ghost haunting that museum as well. So, and we include San Antonio, Texas, where, you know, the Alamo is said to still be haunted in some ways. So cities that you wouldn't normally think are haunted, we talk about those.
And a lot of people think of ping pong as China, and we see that in the Olympics. But you mentioned that people in Berlin love ping pong.
I do. You know, Berlin, I just could go on and on about, because I think it is the coolest city in Europe right now. I think the energy there is just incredible. And I visited for the first time in April, and I went to Cafe Liebling and had a cappuccino and was sort of actually trying to, you know, get inspired to write this foreword. And I saw people playing ping pong across the way in the park, and then I ended up the rest of my time in Berlin, I kept seeing people playing ping pong. So it was just sort of unexpected that they loved it in Berlin, and they would sort of meet different people and invite people they didn't know to play, and friends would get together and play it. So it ended up being a part of the culture there that I just didn't expect.
We're visiting with Annie Fitzsimmons. Annie has written the foreword to National Geographic's The World's Best Cities, and there are 220 great destinations that are mentioned here in this book, everything from Olympic, festival, silver screen, food, haunted, as she mentioned a little while ago, island, happiest, all-American, nightlife, eco-smart, oceanfront, high altitude, canal, Versong, walled, and spa. You mentioned Berlin a little while ago, and we talked both about ping pong, and some people might have thought, well, maybe perhaps some of these areas in Eastern Europe are perhaps some of the haunted ones, because when my daughter went to Ukraine and she stayed in a certain hotel, she said that she felt like she was in a World War II movie, and that she felt almost the hauntings of what happened there.
Yeah, interesting. I think, for sure, I think the Eastern, you know, Romania, for example, we included haunted cities. Transylvania, the birthplace of the man that inspired Dracula, I think that's definitely a haunted place. Berlin, to me, though, actually, is there, the youthful energy there is just unbelievable. And so the airport, the old airport, is still open right now because the new airport has, of course, been delayed for years and years. But when the old airport closes, they're turning it into a thing called Berlin TXL, which is going to be one of the largest startup campuses in the world, just for entrepreneurs to come in and sort of create their businesses and their ideas on this campus. And so I think that is just so cool, because in Berlin, it's not about the corporate, the Fortune 500 companies. It's about that young spirit of creating things. And so I think, as far as, you know, Berlin was a completely different place 25 years ago. This is the 25th anniversary of the fall of the wall. I'll be there for that in a couple of weeks. But the energy, I think, is just unlike any other city in the world right now.
And why do you think it is this way, when you mention the young people?
I think cheap rent, number one. I think you can live very, very well in Berlin very cheaply because it's such a massive city. And not to mention for travelers as well, you can stay in five-star hotels. You know, the Ritz-Carlton can be $200 a night, when in London and Paris it would be $1,000 a night. And so if you can imagine then three-star hotels, which are completely fine and wonderful, are much cheaper than that. So I think it's a really great city for visitors and for people living there alike. You know, the equivalent of Berlin's West Village, you know, where I live in New York, you can get a giant apartment, a beautiful apartment in a redone building for, you know, what you couldn't even get in New York. You couldn't even get like a studio apartment, you know. So I think that it's just they're making it easy for people to live. And, you know, Berlin is not, I was actually surprised by how pretty it was with the green spaces and the parks, but the architecture, for the most part, is not pretty. You know, it's a lot of these older, boxy buildings, communist-style buildings, but they've turned it, they're turning them into these sort of artist colonies and making them places that people really want to explore.
Just one more thing about Berlin and the Cold
Sure.
War and Eastern Europe. A lot of people have stereotypes about what we see in the movies, and we'll get to movies in just a bit. But what about some of the places like Auschwitz and where the Holocaust happened and World War II?
I think that it's a really important part of travel to go to these places and remember and honor, you know, what happened. Auschwitz and Dachau, those places are extremely powerful. I'm also thinking of places like the Anne Frank House in Amsterdam, you know, even places like the 9/11 Memorial Museum here in New York. It's you know, for example, in New York, you're going to come to New York and you're not going to only go to the 9/11 Memorial. You're going to go there and then you're also going to go to shows and you're going to go walk the Brooklyn Bridge and you're going to go eat at restaurants. You're going to sort of have that balance as a visitor. And I think in Europe, it's the same thing where you just, you know, you can go to Berlin and you can really experience and enjoy the newness, the modernness of it, the joy that exists there, the energy, while also spending time as a visitor really reflecting on the history. And I think you can't forget the history, right? And in general terms, it's really not that long ago that it happened. But I think that you definitely need to do both, or you should do both as a traveler.
Annie, we mentioned movies a little while ago, and you have a section dedicated to movies here, to the silver screen. And right as the reader opens to that section, they see a beautiful picture of Austria, and immediately, you know, the hills are alive with the sound of music. That's what comes to your mind. And I just read an article recently, a producer passed on the magazine Smithsonian, about the Van Trapp family and how the grandchildren are putting on shows of their own, and the harmony is incredible, just like their grandparents.
Mm, interesting that the talent that was passed down.
Yeah, yeah.
Who knew? Yeah, yeah. Austria, I lived in Austria when I was in college in Vienna. It's one of my favorite places. And you're right, that photo of the, it's called Hohensalzburg, the fortress on top of the hill, is just so beautiful. And yeah, people, that's a big reason why people visit Salzburg, is to go to visit the Sound of Music sites. And also you can, you know, speaking of, you know, harder, more terrible history, you can also go to Berchtesgaden, which was Hitler's eagle's nest, which is close to Salzburg, which is actually across the border in Germany, but it's also very close. So, but yeah, the silver screen cities we include, you know, more recently, Breaking Bad has been extremely popular, and people go to Albuquerque, New Mexico for Breaking Bad tours, which is interesting. And then, of course, Casablanca, Morocco, or Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman filmed Casablanca, the famous movie. It can be a reason that people go visit places, is to see these places they saw on screen.
And especially when they read a book and then they go watch the movie and then they go see that book took place, and they're like, wow, this is amazing. What I understand is that Mayberry from Andy Griffith Show was so popular that they had to create a fictional Mayberry just so people could go and visit.
I hadn't heard that. How interesting.
Now, you mentioned also Atlanta, Georgia here. And, of course, this is the anniversary of the Gone with the Wind movie and the Wizard of Oz. But it's also the anniversary of, coming up in November, 150th anniversary of when Sherman made that famous march from Atlanta to the sea. And, you know, Atlanta was up in flames. And Gone with the Wind.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I can't believe it. That's, you know, Atlanta, I have to say, to be completely honest, I've only ever been in the airport. And I've wanted to get out, and I know that it's a great place to spend a weekend, but I've never actually been, unfortunately. But that's interesting. interesting to know about the anniversary, too.
We're visiting with Annie Fitzsimmons, and she wrote the foreword to the National Geographic book, The World's Best Cities, Celebrating 220 Destinations. Annie has traveled around the world. She's always on the go, and she's getting ready to leave New York again to continue the tour. Now, as far as the 21st century, and it has been heralded by the Century of the City by National Geographic and some other people, tell us a little bit about how National Geographic, what you all are doing to celebrate the Century of the City.
Sure. So that actually is a term sort of given by the Rockefeller Foundation, because they did this big study about where people are living. And for the first time ever in the history of humanity, the majority of people are living in urban areas. And for me, I talk a lot about how we may be more likely to fly city flags in 30 years rather than country flags. You know, that the world might turn into, rather than a network of over 200 countries, a global network of over 600 cities. And I think for me, especially, you know, as a New Yorker, I'm an American, of course, and I love America. But I love New York, and I might even be a New Yorker first, you know. So I think that that's very telling. For us at National Geographic, we're doing a lot to celebrate. You know, my Urban Insider blog, our current issue, the October issue of Traveler, has a great article called The Traveler 50, about 50 essential places and ideas that have turned the world's smartest cities into travelers' hot tickets. And we have some great articles coming out on Bangkok, Birmingham, Bogota, Berlin, of course, my favorite city. Yeah, so we're doing a lot to really celebrate and focus on what's going on in cities.
Well, you took care of that question. I was going to ask you what your favorite city is, and you've mentioned Berlin several times, so I guess that is your favorite city.
Oh, it is, but I have to mention Swiss cities. I love Switzerland so much. Have you been?
No, ma'am.
No, I love, you know, Zurich, Geneva, Bern, they have such high standards of living and the quality of life is so wonderful that you have these experiences in much bigger cities, but it still feels like you're in a smaller city. And you have this incredible access to nature, to the mountains, to the lakes. And it's just so beautiful. I mean, it just is like a movie set when you go to Switzerland. You can't believe that it just actually looks like that all over the country. So I think that's, you know, a favorite destination that I'll return to over and over. In America, I really love New Orleans, in addition to New York and my hometown of Scottsdale, Arizona as well.
Growing up in Scottsdale, Arizona, it's a beautiful place as well, because a lot of people don't realize just how beautiful the Southwest Desert is.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about growing up in Scottsdale?
Such a great place to grow up. For me, the Southwest, I think it makes you feel simultaneously powerful and insignificant at the same time, because the landscapes are just so otherworldly. Growing up in Scottsdale, it's you know, of course, the weather is amazing most of the year, so it's a really easy place to grow up. And you have all this access to, you know, in 6 hours you can be in Los Angeles, in 2 hours north you can be skiing or at the Grand Canyon. And, you know, not a lot of people are from Arizona, so it's a city where, you know, you have all these New Yorkers or Midwesterners that were sick of the weather and moved to Scottsdale. So you have this really fun melting pot of people. But you're in El Paso, and I actually went to school at Texas A&M. And so when I would drive home, I would drive my car sometimes from A&M to Scottsdale. I would go through El Paso. And so I, you know, would always stop there. And so I'm you know, slightly familiar with it. But also I lived in Dallas for a few years as well, so have the Texas connection, too.
Well, great. Well, next time you're in the area, you need to stop by.
Absolutely. I would love that.
As far as traveling and, well, first of all, you mentioned Texas, and people don't realize how big Texas is, because sometimes we'll get a call and say, we heard something is going on the border. Could you check this out? Not realizing that the border is so huge here and that, you know, it takes 12, 15 hours to travel from one end of the state to the other. Whereas
and
you
I
mentioned.
I think it's true, isn't it, that El Paso is closer to L.A. than it is to Dallas?
Yes.
Yes. So
yes.
That's very telling.
We are visiting with Annie Fitzsimmons. She has written the foreword to the book National Geographic's World's Best Cities, Celebrating 220 Great Destinations. It's an awesome book. We're going to talk a little bit now about cities for song, because there are different categories in this book. And right now I'm looking at Sun Records in Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee. Yes. Yes. And of course, Nashville is included on that list. You know, some of them surprised me that we included, like Hamburg, Germany,
yes,
or Montreux, Switzerland, which is known for deep purple smoke on the water. And then, of course, Liverpool, where the Beatles are from.
Of course, can't forget that.
Yeah. Yeah, is it this year or last year that was the 50th anniversary of the Beatles coming? I think it was
this year, because 64.
Yeah, so we included that. And then, of course, some of the Latin cities like Salvador, Brazil, and Santiago de Cuba. Yeah, so I think that's, you know, song is such an important part of any city, and it really can tell the story of a city.
Talking about the story of the city, some cities are identified by their architecture, some cities are identified by their location, and some cities are famous for their food. And you mentioned the State Fair, and everybody goes there because they want to try all kinds of food. But talking about your traveling and cities known for food, talk about some of the cities you've been to and the foods.
Sure. So people are kind of surprised when I say my favorite food city. I always say Los Angeles because it's this Mediterranean climate, so the quality of food is automatically better than a lot of other places. And they're really focused on the, you know, farm-to-market attitude, which, of course, has been talked about in the media a lot, but it's still really rare. I just think you can travel the world in LA. You can go to Korea in Koreatown, all of these food trucks. You can go to Thai Town. You can get the best sushi ever that's, you know, flown in fresh from Tokyo every morning. And of course, the best salads I think I've ever had are in LA. So I really love eating in LA. I also love, you know, in Italy. It's such a, you know, a stereotype, but it's so true. Italian food is so delicious. And when you go to Florence, Venice, Rome, you have to know where to go. You have to go off the beaten track a little bit. You know, never go to a restaurant with pictures on the menu. But, you know, eating in Italy is just a dream. And then you have to walk it all off. And I also really love eating domestically in New Orleans. I think has fantastic food. And recently I've been surprised in, you know, Williamsburg, Virginia, I visited in May, and they had a great food scene, like beyond the colonial churning butter aspect of Williamsburg. They had an incredible food scene. Same with Mexico City. I was really surprised at how amazing the food was in Mexico City. So there's so many great food cities now, and it's definitely a reason why people are traveling. They're traveling to eat.
What is the most up-and-coming city that you can think of, Annie?
So I would say in Latin America, for me, I would say, or South America, I would say Cusco, Peru. You fly in to visit Machu Picchu there, and I was just blown away. There's so many hotels being built. It's a beautiful colonial city. In America, I would say the South, Louisville, Nashville, Asheville. These are all cities that are really exciting as far as food and culture, and, you know, I think there are people who have left bigger cities like New York and L.A. and have gone home to the South. In Europe, I think Lausanne, Switzerland, in the heart of French-speaking Switzerland, a university town with some of the best nightlife. I think you'll be hearing much more about that. And then I also think for larger cities, you know, just to mention Mexico City again, I was so surprised at how much I loved it and the energy and how safe I felt. I think you'll be hearing a lot more about Mexico City in the years to come.
We are speaking with Annie Fitzsimmons. She has written the foreword to the National Geographic book, The World's Best Cities, celebrating 220 great destinations. We have a couple of minutes probably left. Annie, as we're continuing to discuss the book and you, at the beginning, I mentioned that you have various blogs and different other websites. Would you mind sharing with us what people can get out of those as far as traveling?
Sure, yeah. So my blog on National Geographic is nationalgeographic.com/urbaninsider. And I write a lot about, you know, the best, most authentic places to eat, to see, to visit around the world. I have a lot of articles coming up from my upcoming trips to Europe. I'll be in London, Paris, Berlin, Lisbon. That's coming up. And then also on Facebook, I'm on National Geographic's Urban Insider is my Facebook page, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram. And I have, you know, I always think, to me, the point of going online is to go offline. So I really love having conversations with people and asking where to go, and I found some of my best picks and places around the world from social media, so it's really important to me. So I love having conversations with people on there.
Well, Annie, we enjoyed having the conversation with you today, and we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule in between packing to talk with us about your book. We've been visiting with Annie Fitzsimmons, and she wrote the foreword to the National Geographic book, The World's Best Cities, celebrating 220 destinations. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.